Savoy here on Nova M Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. There is just too much weirdness going on in the wonderful world of Bush fantasies and Cheney fantasies. We're going to get to that tonight. The bottom line, I guess I can put it in one sentence. Bush and Cheney and this corrupt administration doesn't care what is said, what is done by anyone other than the voices they listen to. And then the second sentence would be, while Bush is playing International Traveler, Cheney is giving speeches in front of the American-Israel Political Action Committee, making it very clear that Cheney and Bush don't care. They have a plan to shake up the entire Middle East and realign it in favor of the United States and Israel, and that's what they're going to do, period. If it means nuclear war with Iran, too bad. It's incredible. Another casualty in the Walter Reed scandal, Wiley General Kiley, the Army Surgeon General, has been fired. This is the compassionate conservative that told Congress he didn't even know about the horrid conditions at Walter Reed, even though they're right across the street, because, you know, like, I don't do inspections, man. You know, I've got, you see, the three stars, right? So he's getting out. He's gone now. Just because they're firing the top brass doesn't mean they're fixing the problems. Just as, in the same vein, moving the headquarters of Halliburton to Dubai, you're not surprised, are you? Doesn't mean they're not a nest of filthy, murderous criminals. It just makes it harder to track them, harder to prosecute them, and we're going to bring that up tonight, too. Also, Bush is still on his anti-Chavez tour of South America. Yesterday, he was in Colombia, causing half of that country's military to be used to protect him from protesters. It was insane. We have some information about that, too. The only reason he went to Colombia is because the dictator of that country, Uribe, is about the only friend other than the dictator of Mexico that Bush has left. But it is so dangerous there that they barely let him off the plane. He was there, I think, for 7 hours, surrounded by military the entire time he was there. 20,000, I believe, Colombian troops and 7,000 police. It was just insane. And while he was there, he warned members of the United States Congress that he expected his supplemental surge, another 8,000 troops to Afghanistan and Iraq, and another $3.2 billion taxpayer dollars to be fully funded and the soldiers supplied with no strings attached. He doesn't want to hear dissent, doesn't want to hear debate, doesn't want to hear argument. This is my money, my troops, he says. I will send it wherever the hell I feel like sending it. And I don't want to hear anything from anybody. And, of course, the Democrats immediately fell to their knees and did for him what Monica did for Bill. Democrats are not going to resist. Not in the slightest. And finally, Cheney was out there doing his psychotic mass killer act in front of the American-Israel Political Action Committee about evil Democrats who want to stop his killing machine. And he warned about the dangers of funding Sunni militant groups in a proxy war against Hamas, which is exactly what this rotten son of a bitch is doing. It's exactly... That's the master plan. I have something to share with you tonight from Seymour Hersh. This is exactly what they're doing. We are so through the looking glass. This is insanity. We are living in someone else's insane stream. We really are. We'll have some sound for you tonight from Dick Cheney. That is astonishing. It's just astonishing. Jesus. In our attempt, though, to try, just try to find some levity before we begin, I find more and more levity these days in religion. You know, I mean, there's always something that is just so funny. The story about the Mayan priests who are trying to purge ancient sites that Bush apparently has toured or is going to or did tour. I guess he does tomorrow. I don't know. I don't know why he does that. Bush couldn't care less about ancient Mayan ruins. He doesn't even know what a Mayan is. He doesn't know what a ruin is. He has no idea. But I guess they do this. His handlers do this to, I don't know, tickle the folks back home. I don't know. But the Mayan priests are so upset in their that their area, their holy sites are being visited by this demon that they're going in to cleanse it, purify it. We mentioned this last week. And I was listening to NPR news today, and I heard the NPR reporter, I guess the one traveling with the Bush entourage, describing this, and the kind of condescension, it was there, trust me, it was there, in the reporter's voice about these Mayan priests. You know, probably go in there with their chants and their oils and drums and incenses and prayers and rituals to try to cleanse the area from you know, this vile bush. You know my take on religion. To me, it's all bat snot. But anyway, what was interesting was listening to the kind of patronizing attitude of the NPR guy talking about that sort of religious ritual. Whereas, if this psychotic Nazi bastard Jerry Falwell or James Dobson or Pat Robertson or any of these scum, these slime in the United States, when they say things like, God, you know, some cloud being who apparently on the morning of September 11th, 2001, burped up his coffee, didn't like the way coffee tasted, and according to Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, lifted the veil of protection over the United States so that this sick bastard God could murder 3,000 people on U.S. soil. Now, you never hear an NPR reporter or anybody in American media point out the utter hideous lunacy, idiocy of those kinds, you know, the Christians, or Jews who talk about parting the Red Sea, or Christians who talk about corpses rising on the third day, or Catholics who really, really do believe that when they take communion, they're eating flesh and drinking blood. That is acceptable. But let some funky little Mayan priest decide to cleanse an area polluted by this filthy bush. Oh, well, look at these little dumbasses. Their religion is such a dumbass religion. Doesn't it, a dumbass? Huh? They believe in evil spirits. Now, we believe in the Christian faith up here in Norte Americano and the Jewish faith and whatever else we can, you know, pillage and loot and turn into a moneymaker. And, you know, our God got really pissed off up here, so he lifted the veil. And the Catholics will still tell you that exorcist people get possessed by demons. Demons, and they have to be exorcised. I can't stand it sometimes, you know? I feel like I'm going out of my gibbering mind. So apparently the Mayan priest trying to cast out evil spirits is jokey and funny and quaint and kind of third worldy. But Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and James Dobson and these other pukes talking about this God of theirs deciding on a September 11th morning to murder 3,000 people in what we call United States. Oh, well, that's because of the queers. That's because of the abortionists. That's because of the haints and the spirits and the goblins and the demons. Oh, Carl Sagan, you died way too soon.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 21 past the hour. More religious nonsense. Only in this country, well, in Guatemala, you know, when a Mayan priest decides to make a statement like, "I've got to go cast out the bad spirits where the demon bushwalked," everybody laughs. In this country, when someone really, really evil, like the Reverend R. Albert Moeller, who's the president of the prominent and influential Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, when he says something that is sick and degenerate and horribly dangerous, it is sick and degenerate and horribly dangerous. You understand? He has called this thug, this white man, with his suit and his corpulent face and his carefully coiffed hair, and his utter contempt and hatred for Jesus Christ, this man has called for a policy that would support, quote, medical treatment, end quote, if it were to become available, to change the sexual orientation of a fetus inside its mother's womb from homosexual to heterosexual. Now think about that. This rat bastard is suggesting that a test, if it ever comes available, to determine whether or not an in utero fetus may be born and live its life in a very normal way, but simply as homosexual rather than heterosexual. This rat bastard wants to go in there with knives and chemicals and change it. Now, again, his name is the Reverend R. Albert Moeller. No offense to all of our German-listening people out there, but how come all of these guys who come up with this insanity are so often German? Isn't this, they want to go into the womb and murder a person's orientation? I can't get my mind around this. Why isn't this guy standing on a street corner preaching the gospel of his Lord and Savior Jesus? Why isn't he in the slums, of the worst slums in America, begging for food and then giving it to people who are starving to death? No, this son of a bitch is advocating surgery, chemical invasion inside a pregnant woman's uterus, if a test can be developed that says, well, this child is going to be totally normal. Oh, by the way, in its normalcy, its orientation may be homo rather than hetero. Oh, my God. Now, Moeller says that, or indicates that he acknowledges the strides that genetic science is making in identifying and isolating, get this, genetic abnormalities, defects, and diseases. And into that category, this filthy animal places sexual orientation. He says, if a test could be developed, it would be yet another tool in the war to root out and cleanse sin. This thug says that, quote, given the consequences of the fall, that is when that whore bitch Eve convinced Adam to eat of the apple, and the effects of human sin, we should not be surprised, he says, that such a causation or link is found. After all, this pig says, the human genetic structure, along with every other aspect of creation, shows the pernicious effects of the fall and of God's judgment. End quote. In other words, this filthy subhuman is advocating and believes that someone's sexual orientation If it happens to be the one this pig doesn't subscribe to, that orientation is one of God's ways of punishing us because Eve, vicious bitch that she was, ate of the tree and gave it to Adam. So he's got a twofer here, doesn't he? He continues the blood libel against women while at the same time figuring out a way to murder in the womb a person's absolutely normal sexual orientation. Jesus Christ.
The siren of the ambulance, the deadpan of the cops, chalk to mark the outline where the boy first drops. Beware the Holy Trinity, church and state and law. For every death the virus gets more deadly than before. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
No, I'm not ready to let this topic die just yet because this, what the head of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary said. Keep in mind that seminary is the flagship school of the Southern Baptist Convention, and it's one of the largest seminaries in the world, and churns out at an alarming rate people whose brains are so polluted with hate and like this guy. But keep it. Do you understand what he's saying here? The religious nutballs, and they're not just all clustered in Christianity where it concerns gaydom or homosexuality. They're also in Judaism and Islam. Just about, you know, the three religions of the book hate queers, period. And don't give me this, oh, hate the sin, love the sinner, crap. They hate queers. With all the strife that's going on, all the stuff that needs healing and salvation and understanding, these people focus on gay folk and condemn them. You rotten bastards. I can't get my mind around this, but understand what they're saying here, what this jerk is saying. Understand what he's saying. There has been an argument, not that I think it's all that relative, but there has been an argument that one's sexual orientation is genetic. It's just some people are homosexual, some are heterosexual. These religious asses, I can only go so far, can't I, have been saying that homosexuality is a choice. They're saying it's a sin, and people choose it. You don't. Now they're calling. Now they're equating it with their sick concept of original sin. Have they not been saying that homosexuality is a choice? And now along comes this murderous bastard and says, if a test can be developed that shows a fetus in utero has a genetic predisposition to being homosexual, let's kill it. Which is what he's talking about. So this sick bastard is saying, well, now, hold on just a second. If it's genetic, it's from God. Right? Huh? God doesn't make mistakes. So if it's in the womb and it's a little queer, isn't that from God? So this guy wants to step in and say, God, you screwed up. Where's the laser? Where's the chemicals? Anything. These people will do anything in their hatred and contempt and fear of homosexuality. I don't even know why there's a term for it. I don't know why there's a term for heterosexuality. What the hell is it? Okay. This guy says, this is his quote, if a biological basis is found, a biological basis for homosexuality, and if a prenatal test is then developed, a biological basis, that means it's from God, to these sick bastards. And if a successful treatment to reverse the sexual orientation to heterosexuals ever developed, we would support its use, as we would unapologetically support the use of any appropriate means to avoid sexual temptation and the inevitable, turn the page, effects of sin. I just can't handle it. There's some things I can't handle. War. This freak.
Well, Mike, it was Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
I think either Cain or Abel was gay, frankly. Now, I've said this a million times on this program. I've been saying it for 25 years. As far as I'm concerned, there is no such thing as homosexual or heterosexual as a clearly defined, distinct, never going to switch or change or do anything one way or the other syndrome. That sexuality is on a sliding scale. What do you call it, Kathy? Not a sliding scale, but a continuum. Some people, over here you have exclusively heterosexual, over here you have exclusively homosexual, and then that continuum, depending on circumstances, environment, attitude, thoughts, feelings in the moment, if someone is inclined towards a sexual experience, it can be one or the other, either with a member of the same sex or a member of the opposite sex. But even discussing it is just so stupid. Well, you know, Mike, there's some people who like carrots and some people who don't like carrots. Now, over here on this end of the continuum, we have people who really, really love carrots, and they're convinced that carrots will stop you from going blind. And you ever seen a rabbit with glasses? No, of course not. So over here, the people love carrots. Now, over here are people who hate carrots. And the carrot lovers and the carrot haters, they live in two different worlds.
Yeah, but I believe there's a continuum, you know. Given the right circumstances, if you were starving to death, you'd probably eat a carrot. And
you see how mad it is? It's just crazy. When I read that, that thing about this puke who calls himself a minister of Jesus, oh my God, I suppose he thinks that those 12 disciples were all heterosexual, huh? Huh? I bet he does, doesn't he? What would happen to him if he found out two or three of them were queer? Like maybe James? And what about Judas? Now he'd go for that. He'd say, "Well, see, there you go." How about Andrew? 12 guys wandering around the Middle East 2,000 years ago, homeless, none of them married, long hair, sandals, right? You know what I'm talking about, huh? Hey, Rev, you ought to check that out, boy. I bet you're gonna find a couple of them old gay boys in there, huh? You think? And take another look at Da Vinci's The Last Supper. Take another look. The Food and Drug Administration has unveiled voluntary food safety rules. Only in America. Can you believe this? The government has new rules for preventing food poisoning in fresh-cut produce, but companies don't have to follow them. No, you're laughing, Kathy. Here it is. Here it is. Fruit and vegetable-related outbreaks of food poisoning are on the rise, and in recent months have struck in spinach, tomatoes, lettuce, and cantaloupes. In the new voluntary rules announced today by the Food and Drug Administration, fruit and vegetable processors are urged to adopt food safety plans similar to those in the meat industry. The difference, of course, is that in the meat industry, the controls are mandatory! A woman who's director of food safety at the Center for Science and the Public Interest and Advocacy Group says the new guidance is totally unenforceable. She says while a grower or processor may choose to use the guidance one week, they could choose not to use it the next. And there's nothing government to do if the grower or processor chooses not to use the standards at all. Oh, my God, I hate this administration with a depth and width and breadth my soul doth reach. F- Fresh cut produce includes shredded lettuce, sliced tomatoes, salad mixes, peeled baby carrots, broccoli florets, cauliflower florets, cut celery stalk, shredded cabbage, cut melon, sliced pineapple, and sectioned grapefruit.
Yeah, we're going to have these tough standards. When we're developing the corn to make ethanol, we're going to have tough standards on fruit and vegetables. And, of course, we're not going to enforce them.
I got something here by David Sirota that he wrote in his blog today. The Washington Post reports that in recent weeks, stock markets shuddered because of concerns that risky mortgage loans are cracking the foundation of the housing sector. And federal grand juries have indicted managers who gamed compensation documents to guarantee themselves fat paydays. Now, that's led the SEC to announce that it is hunting for evidence of rampant insider trading that cheats average investors. So what, pray tell, is the response from the Bush White House and corporate America? Pledges to clean up its act? Promises to crack down on fraud? No, of course not. Instead, we get this from the CEOs in the Bush administration. Listen to this. The organized drive to scrap post-Enron accounting rules began last fall with the creation of the Committee on Capital Markets Regulation, a group that won the blessing of Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson. Paulson is mobilizing some of the nation's most high-wattage financial luminaries, including former Federal Reserve Board President Alan Greenspan and Paul Volcker, and chieftains from Berkshire Hathaway, General Electric, and J.P. Morgan Chase, to appear at Georgetown University. Among the items the U.S. Chamber panelists will promote in their report Wednesdays are top-to-bottom reforms at the SEC, which they say is staffed with too many lawyers who create and enforce rules. Jesus Christ. Too many lawyers who enforce the rules. Yes, of course, the problem in our economy is not executives ripping off shareholders and pensioners. No, it's too many lawyers enforcing the rules. Oh, my God. Let's get that queer gene. Let's get it here. Give me a knife. Give me a laser here. Wait a minute. Ah. There, you little cretin, now you'll be straight. You can become an SEC advisor or work in the cabbage industry.
Out, join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Ten before the hour, regarding that Mayan priest story, email here from Smith. Okay. Mike, you were talking about those Mayan religious leaders attempting to drive out the unholy spirits brought upon their sacred lands by the visitation of the president and murderer-in-chief. I just wondered, do you remember this story, the oil on the chairs cleansing? Remember that, Kathy, that the radical right did before the GOP installed Roberts and Alito into the Supreme Court? Remember that? They snuck into Supreme Court chambers and smeared the seats with some sort of holy sanctified oil.
Well, don't you remember when Ashcroft, the Crisco kid, would anoint himself with some of that crap before he'd get out and before the public,
know.
The statue draping freak?
My writer says at least the Mayans were trying to preserve the sanctity of their homeland. The radical religious right uses their superstition in an attempt to bring about their new world order, and they snuck in to do it. Good thing they weren't terrorists planting bombs, huh? And it was, I remember that now. The Reverend Robert Schenck, he sent me Smith sent me this. The Reverend Robert Shank of the National Clergy Council, Reverend Patrick Mahoney of the Christian Defense Coalition, and somebody, General Manager of Faith in Action, were barred on Thursday, this is some time ago, from entering the hearing room where the Senate Judiciary Committee was holding confirmation hearing on Samuel Alito's nomination to the Supreme Court. They were permitted to bless the doors, reading three psalms, kneeling to say the Lord's Prayer in front of the doors, and making a cross in oil on the door. They also said they had actually entered the hearing room a day earlier to anoint the seats with oil. Shank said, "We did adequately apply oil to all the seats." Shank and Mahoney said they had done the same prior to the hearings for Chief Justice John Roberts and were pleased with the results. Oh, my God.
Oh. And explain to me again why the media jumps all over the Mayans for their ritual cleansing, but they take completely seriously the people who want the Pope to bless their fish, the sandwich, or what, you know,
KFC.
Please bless our sandwich. Well, that's normal. You know, there's nothing crazy about that.
Kay in San Francisco. Mike, on Friday you reported on comments made by Zell Miller in which he stated America's problems with military recruitment, Social Security, and immigration are, quote, a direct result of the 43 million babies who have been killed since Roe v. Wade. Miller argued that, quote, if those children had lived, they'd now be signed up for Bush's military escapades, filling American jobs currently held by those damned illegals and paying into Social Security. Kay writes, it struck me that of all of these problems, so-called, Miller failed to mention the connection between abortion and another favorite bugaboo of the right, the crime rate. After all, Bill Bennett took a stand on this back in 2005. Remember this, Kathy? When he asserted that the side effects of abortion could be positive, at least when it came to African Americans. Bennett said, quote, I do know that it's true that if you wanted to reduce crime, you could, well, if that were your sole purpose, you could abort every black baby in this country and your crime rate would go down. That would be an impossible, ridiculous, and morally reprehensible thing to do, but your crime rate would go down. End quote. Kay writes, look like there may be trouble brewing between these two misanthropic degenerate fascists whose values are at the core of this misanthropic degenerate Bush administration. The good news is that maybe there's hope. After all, didn't Miller once challenge Chris Matthews to a duel? Yeah, I hate these people with a passion that surprises me sometimes. You know, Miller was speaking at a fundraiser in Macon, Georgia, and talking about how abortion is why we don't have soldiers to go die. Dumb son of a bitch. I mean, he makes no connection between the idiocy of what he's saying and the idiocy of what he's projecting. It's incredible. And then this other scum sucker, this gambling wife beater, Bill Bennett, says, well, you know, a couple of years ago that the crime rate would be solved if we just go kill all the black babies in utero. They all want to get inside the womb, don't they? This rat bastard at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary wants to get in there and see if there's a little queer in there. What's his name? Bill Bennett wants to get in there and murder all the black ones. Zell Miller wants to get in there and save all the white ones so they can go die for George Bush. These sons of bitches are they're insane. Kathy, they're insane. These are demons. These are crazed. I can't understand what kind of a race these people are who have sucked down into our consciousness.
And you're forgetting that George Bush wants to stuff all the empty ones full of snowflakes.
Oh, God.
Make all the non-pregnant women carry the little test tube snowflakes that are frozen that otherwise would just be, I don't know, used for something useful like curing cancer or something.
Oh, Jesus.
They love them in the uterus. They just don't like them once they're out.
They don't even like them in the uterus. The uterus is just a very convenient hidey hole for little queers to jump in and hide.
But it's good.
That's what this jackass is saying.
I think I figured out a long time ago why Bush wanted the snowflake babies. He thinks there's some way to conscript them later. You know, somehow he'll have a claim on him and he can force him into military service. I put you in there.
Oh, my God.
You have to follow me, soldier.
I can't do this much longer, Kathy. I really can't. I mean, every day, I feel like I'm walking through the halls of an insane asylum. Back when it wasn't an insane asylum, back when it was a bug house or a madhouse or a snake pit or a hole that you threw mentally deranged people into. Only, you know, there doesn't seem to be any walls. You know, these sons of bitches seem to be showing up on television and in the halls of government. And I don't know. It's just... It's just madness. Let's take a break, and let me go see if I can inject myself with some kind of a calmative. We'll come back and do the program.
We have a good Merlot tonight.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Oh, by the way, House Republicans said today that Democrats, this is in the People's House, the Democrats should retract an offer to let the nation's largest Islamic civil rights organization use a Capitol conference room for a seminar. The House Republican conference, according to, I guess this is an AP story, the House Republican Conference referred to the Council on American Islamic Relations, or it's known by the acronym CAIR, C-A-I-R. The House Republican Conference referred to the Council on American Islamic Relations as, quote, terrorist apologists, end quote. Jesus Christ. And the Republicans called on House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to cancel the forum that's scheduled for tomorrow. The Republicans sent out a press release that carried a Washington Times article. That's the one owned by the newest Jesus, Sun Myung-moon. Well, he's not the newest. One of the Jesuses, Washington Times, Sun Myung-moon. The article was headlined, quote, Democrats arrange official meeting with pro-Hamas, pro-Hezbollah group in U.S. Capitol, end quote. You see what they do? See what they do? A spokesperson for CAIR said it's really disappointing. That was the communications director, Ibrahim Hooper, who we've had on the program over the years. He says it's really disappointing. We don't even have to ask anymore which party it is when there's an attack from elective officials. It should be a concern to ordinary Republicans that the party is being viewed as a reservoir of anti-Muslim hate. The Capitol building, you see, is open to all Americans and should be available to encourage dialogue on the most relevant domestic and international issues of the day. That's a statement from Representative Bill Pascrell, a Democrat from New Jersey, who said it's common practice for members of Congress to authorize use of rooms in the Capitol for advocacy group meetings. Hooper, the spokesman for the Council on American Islamic Relations, noted that the organization had launched public service ads on TV against terrorism, had worked closely with the FBI and other government agencies. CAIR officials joined Bush in a visit to Islamic centers after the September 11 attacks. Republicans are vermin. They're cockroaches. I hate them so deeply. I just hate them so deeply. Remember that meeting we went to here in Atlanta, Kathy? Or I don't know. I guess you didn't come along. Did you come along? Council on it was the same thing. And this is where they were being introduced to the head of the Atlanta FBI field office. And I went to that meeting and immediately got into an argument with the FBI agent. Remember that? That was about three 3 years ago, maybe four, that's when there was no longer any doubt about my position on a terrorist watch list. I'm surprised I can still fly. Just a couple more. Israel has recalled its naked ambassador. Did you hear that? The Israeli ambassador to El Salvador, this according to the BBC, was found drunk and naked. And in his room where he was found, there was a bunch of bondage gear. Not there's anything wrong with that. Reports said he was able to identify himself to police only after a rubber ball had been removed from his mouth. A foreign ministry, an Israeli foreign ministry official described Ambassador Zuriel Rafael's behavior as an unprecedented embarrassment. According to the BBC, the incident has renewed calls for a radical overhaul on the way Israel appoints and promotes its diplomats. Yeah, sort of like here, too. He was being recalled, according to the government in Israel, although he had not broken any laws. The foreign ministry, Israeli foreign ministry spokeswoman, Zahavat Ben-Hillel, told reporters. She confirmed that lurid reports of the incident in the Israeli press were accurate. She said, quote, "We're talking about behavior that is unbecoming of a diplomat," end quote. Haaretz website reports that police found Mr. Rafael in the Israeli embassy compound where he'd been found bound, gagged, and naked, very near to the sadomasochistic sex accessories. I thought only the British still did that. Israelis do it too? Huh? Some Israelis? Beat me, flay me, make me tell bad jokes. Oh my God. I could never understand that ball in the mouth thing. I've seen the pictures. You know, it's usually red. And say it again.
Well, it played a large role in Pulp Fiction. No pun intended.
Oh yeah, in that movie. That's right. What was the character's name?
Marsalis Wallace.
That's right, Marsalis Wallace. And then he said, "I'm about to get medieval on your ass." Oh God, have mercy. Bush in Colombia, amid security and protests. New York Times reporting this. Bush came to Colombia to pledge support for his closest South American ally, President Alvaro Uribe, a real right winger. Bush stayed for only 7 hours before heading to his next stop, Guatemala. Security officials in Colombia were so concerned, they even sent a phony airport motorcade as a decoy to flush out any potential attackers on the route to the presidential palace. Nothing happened. Bush's host, Mr. Uribe, is right now going through a scandal linking some close supporters to his administration to paramilitary drug traffickers and death squads that are on the U.S. list of terror groups, but they operate freely with the U.S. blessings. We put them on the list to make it look good. Growing human rights abuses in that country have led groups like Human Rights Watch to oppose approval of a trade deal with Colombia that has already been signed by Bush. Anti-Bush protesters battled the police, burned American flags a mile from the presidential palace where the presidents met. Bush said, quote, "I appreciate the president's determination to bring human rights violators to justice." See, Uribe supports them, funds the human rights violators, the death squads. He funds them. And it's with your money and mine, foreign aid. Bush said, "He's strong in that determination. It's going to be very important for members of my United States, our United States Congress, to see that determination." That's what he said, "my United States Congress, to see that determination. I believe, if given a fair chance, President Uribe can make the case." Asked whether the scandals racking Mr. Uribe's administration had shaken Mr. Bush's confidence in him, Bush to Bush said no, because Mr. Uribe had told him that Colombia's judicial independence would hold people to account, regardless of who they are. Investigations have pointed to kidnappings, assassination, torture within Colombia's secret police, targeting union officials and academics. These actions, according to investigators, have been carried out by political supporters of Alvaro Uribe, working with paramilitary leaders. murder, torture, kidnappings, assassination. Mr. Uribe addressed what he called the revelations about his administration in his opening remarks, saying they were happening because our law on justice and peace requires and demands truth. He repeated his argument that the scandal had come to light because of actions promoted by his government. In other words, he's trying to say, well, we investigated and found out these terrible paramilitaries were being run by my friends. Gosh, how did that happen? Jose Miguel Vivanco, America's director of Human Rights Watch in Washington, said this spin has no basis in fact. Mr. Vivanco said the scandal's disclosure were made public through independent investigations by the news media. Reporters, of course, then were murdered after being tortured. 20,000 troops and police assigned to Bush's protection. They lined his route from the airport to the presidential palace with the troops, were you submachine guns visible on the streets and on rooftops. Huh? Isn't that fun? Well, tomorrow it's off to Guatemala.
Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Past the hour, Bush in Latin America is worse than George trying to play a world leader. It's much worse than that. From the Institute for Public Accuracy, a couple of comments here. One from Hector de la Cueva, who is director for the Center for Labor Research and Union Consultation. He said today, quote, Bush is in Latin America in part to promote, quote, so-called free trade, but this does not look good to most people in Mexico. Since NAFTA, wages have gone down in Mexico. There are fewer jobs, and the jobs are worse. This has created a social disaster in Mexico. This is why you have so much migration to the U.S., mainly from the countryside, but also from the cities. Now they're talking about something about NAFTA Plus, which will make things worse. NAFTA is not free trade. It's not free, and it's not only about trade. It's a supranational economic constitution. The big corporations and biggest companies make these rules for their benefit, and most people in the less developed countries become worse off. End quote. Most people in industrialized countries become worse off, too. Viz. The United States of America. Mark Weisbrot, who is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, says, quote, Bush's trip to Latin America is all about denial. He says Latin America's economic growth over the past 25 years has been a disaster, the worst long-term growth failure in more than 100 years. From 1980 to 2000, gross domestic product per person in that part of the world grew by only 9% and another 4% for 2000 to 2005. Compare this to 82% for just the two decades from 1960 to 1980 in that part of the world. And it's easy to see why candidates promising new economic policies have been elected and some reelected in Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Ecuador, Nicaragua, Uruguay, and Venezuela. They also came close to winning in Mexico, Peru, and Costa Rica. And the vote in Mexico was stolen, just like it was here, in two of our presidential elections. James Petras, who is an author of books in the South, South America, said Bush's visit to Latin America is an effort to recoup declining imperial influence by consolidating ties with both the rightist client regimes, Uribe in Colombia and Calderon in Mexico, and the pseudo so-called center-left neoliberal regimes of Vasquez in Uruguay and Lula in Brazil. The purpose is to integrate these client regimes into the U.S. economic and diplomatic orbit and to construct an anti-Chavez coalition. Given that Bush has no popular support in Latin America at all, he will only meet with client rulers behind closed doors with heavy security protecting him. Parallel to Bush's visit, President Chavez will visit Argentina, where tens of thousands of
Malloy, live on the Nova M Radio Network. This is Mike Malloy, live on the Nova M Radio Network.
Cheney's out of control. Today, he appeared before AIPAC, and he offered what's referred to by the Times as an aggressive defense of the Bush administration's Iraq strategy. And this is where he said that those in Congress who pursue a gradual withdrawal of American forces are, quote, undermining the troops. And that a withdrawal would represent, quote, a full validation of the al-Qaeda strategy, end quote. You know, what we're doing in Iraq has absolutely nothing to do with terrorism, has nothing to do with anything, except a complete refiguring of the Middle East. What Cheney and the neocons and the Israelis are looking for is an utter and absolute destruction of some of these sovereign countries, including Iran, including Egypt, including some of these countries that have the potential to develop nuclear weapons and may at any time, if they do, turn those nuclear weapons toward Israel. The policies that we're pursuing in the Middle East have more and more and more to do with the safety and security of Israel, less and less and less to do with the safety and security of the United States. Oil is one of the elements also, but to reconfigure the Middle East in favor of the U.S.-Israel axis is exactly what this is all about. Do you have any doubts anymore? Cheney states it, and we're going to play it for you in his own words. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Thanks. Welcome back. I'm too freaked out here. Today, we were, Kathy and I were working in the yard when the kid was in the yard, working in the back of the house up against the foot of the hill where the underbrush gets pretty heavy. You know, we have to cut it away, especially now. We've got a fence back there. We've got to have a space for Molly because she's old enough now. In the past, we just kind of left it a little bit wild with the animals back there and the snakes and whatever. So we're out there, and I'm cutting brush. I felt like George Bush, but it was 78 degrees down here and hotter than hell, comparatively speaking. So you know, I'm getting overheated. At one point, I felt something sting my wrist, and I thought, oh, Jesus, another spider bite. And I looked down, here's this bloody hole in little tiny hole and blood, and I see something skitter away. I hate that. I hate that because you don't know what the hell just bit you. So I walked over to, I was going to go get some water and just wash it off, go in the house and take some laundry soap and, you know, cake of laundry soap and a brush and scrub. So Kathy said, what happened? And all of a sudden, I felt like I was going to faint. And my heart rate went up, and it was kind of hard to breathe for a second. And I said, gul, gul, gul. She said, do you want me to go get some Benadryl? And I said, gul, gul, gul. So she got some topical Benadryl in a capsule. And in the meantime, I'm sitting my ass down because it really, you know, I thought, oh, no, anaphylactic shock. You're going to die. Here it comes. Yeah. So I took the Benadryl and, you know, and my wrist started to swell a little bit. And I thought, damn, I went over to the back to the fence where I'd been working. And there was a spider on the ground trying to skitter away. Well, now it's a dead spider. So, I snatched it up just on the chance it would be, you know, she'd have to show it to the EMS people when they came out to resuscitate my ass. So, anyway, I'm sitting there, and I say, just real quick, give me the BP, you know, monitor. So I took my blood pressure. It was like, it was way out of whack, 154 over 109, and I don't have anything like that. And so we just sat in the shade for a while and drank some water, and you know, after about 5 or 10 minutes, it all went away. But I said to her, you know what I just felt like? She said, what? I said, I just felt like how I get sometimes around Bush and Cheney talking about them. And I don't dare bring a blood pressure cuff into this studio. I don't dare because if I took a BP reading, it would be like it was this after 156 over 109. Jesus. And my heart rate was up to 109, which is not, you know, my resting rate is about 56, 57. So, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, what the hell stung me? It was either a spider, and I've got a little spider corpse out in back still. I guess I'll just throw it away now because obviously nothing's going to happen. This is about 8 hours ago, right? 9 hours ago. Jeez. Cheney says that the Democrats are supporting terrorism, that Democrats who want to bring our soldiers home are counterproductive in sending the wrong message to our enemies. He said, when members of Congress pursue an anti-war strategy, they're not supporting the troops, they're undermining them. This filthy pig, who has never served his country in any manner, has only used his position in government all these years to rape, pillage, and loot. That's all this bastard has ever done. He said those lawmakers who seek to impose time limits on the American presence in Iraq are, quote, telling the enemy simply to watch the clock and wait us out. So he went on and on. Let me tell you what he, let me play for you now what he said, and then the Democrat reaction. Now, before insulting congressional Democrats for wanting to save our troops' lives and innocent Iraqi lives, Cheney had this to say about our friendship with Israel. Of course, not a word here about Halliburton's move to Dubai.
Thank you. Karl Rove finds out about this, he won't let me out again. We're here today as citizens from different parts of the country, diverse backgrounds, many professions, and various political affiliations. Yet we find unity and strength in the values of liberty and equality, in our belief in democracy and the rule of law, and in our devotion to the security of America's friend, the State of Israel. As most of you know, the President is traveling in Latin America this week, solidifying our friendships in that region and promoting an agenda of democracy, economic progress, and security.
Oh, Christ.
He asked me to convey to this gathering his great appreciation for your efforts, his strong support for Israel, and his firm commitment to peace in the Holy Land, built on a foundation of security, not surrender. Peace requires a Palestinian government that recognizes Israel's right to exist, accepts the validity of past agreements, and renounces violence and terrorism totally and completely.
Any conditions there, Mr. Vice President, for our friends in the Israel government? Anything at all? like validity of past agreements and the territories and the continued acquisition of Palestinian land in violation not only of international law but of Israeli law. Anything there, Mr. Vice President, that the Israelis have to do? No? Okay, just thought I'd check. So Cheney describes the dual struggle Israelis and Americans fight against all these Islamic terrorists who want to kill all Christians and Jews. I guess all Palestinians are terrorists, like all Iraqis are terrorists in Darth Cheney's universe. Once again, the irony here, listen to it, in Cheney's doublespeak, is not only nauseating but mind-numbing.
We understand, as Ariel Sharon put it, the right and responsibility of every democracy, if it wishes to survive, to protect itself and its values. Doing so requires moral clarity, the courage of our convictions, a willingness to act when action is necessary, and a refusal to submit to any form of intimidation ever. We are the prime targets of a terror movement that is global in nature and, yes, global in its ambitions. One that would impose a narrow, radical vision of Islam that rejects tolerance, suppresses dissent, brutalizes women, and has one of its foremost objectives, the destruction of Israel. It's odd to think of ideologues out of the dark ages having a modern media strategy, but the fact is they do. They take videos of their attacks and put them up on the internet to get them broadcast on television. They send messages and images by email and tell their followers to spread the word. They wage war by stealth and murder, disregarding the rules of warfare and rejoicing in the death of the innocent. The terrorists value death the same way you and I value life.
Jesus Christ. I mean, this he's describing himself. What's wrong with you, clot boy? What do you mean they wage war by stealth and murder? What the hell do you do? Disregarding the rules of warfare. Geneva Conventions? Torture? Oh, never mind. Rejoicing in the death of the innocent. What do we call it? Collateral damage. More children and families and wedding parties wiped out. Oh, okay. A refusal, he says, to submit to any form of intimidation ever. That's where the United States stands. We will never be intimidated. No. Ass, we are the intimidators. We are the intimidators. Who intimidates us? Who? Now I understand why Cheney considers Israel to be such an ally of the United States, because preemptive war is a shared doctrine. Kill first, ask questions later. And still, Cheney insists that the Palestinians recognize Israel's right to exist, which has nothing to do, we went through this the other night. It has nothing to do with the establishment of a state called Israel. It has nothing to do with that. What it has to do with is the Palestinians who have been driven into Bantustans are supposed to accept this and honor it and cherish it. And they never will. And I don't know why. I'll tell you how to solve the Israeli-Palestinian problem. Very, very simply, the way it looks. The way the Americans and the Israelis, apparently, the Israeli government, not the Israelis. I always assume people are going to understand I make a distinction, and then I get the, "You're a Jew hater!" emails, and I just go out of my freaking mind. Here's the way to solve the Israeli-Palestinian issue. Kill every single Palestinian. Now, that requires killing them all in the territories, that's including the children. And then going into Jordan and killing them there because there's millions there. Then going into Lebanon and killing them there because there's millions, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who have gone to exile there. Track down every single Palestinian and kill them all. Then you'll have peace. Because until Israel recognizes that the establishment of the state of Israel took place on a country that the Palestinians, poor chumps that they were, thought was their country, there is not going to be peace in that part of the world. It's not going to happen Does nobody get that?
Vice President Cheney. Dick is a killer. 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 Vice President Cheney, you showed the way.
Got a problem.
About 7:30 before the hour, you thought we disappeared, didn't you? Just a little delay there. All right, back to Cheney giving his speech today before the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. I always say Political Action Committee, which is more correct. Public Affairs Committee is such a misnomer. But now begins the really sharp digs at those members of Congress interested in saving our troops. Saving their lives, and the brain damage, and the blown away heads, and the removed arms, and the triple amputees. You know, the Democrats in Congress who are just rat bastards and want to save their lives. Oh, yeah, and the innocent Iraqis. Those evil bastards. Those Democrats trying to save people's lives. Here Cheney growls about the non-binding resolution that passed in the House and warned of nefarious other evils Congress might have in store.
The resolution that passed was not binding, only a statement of feelings. Yet other threats have been made that would hamper the war effort and interfere with the operational authority of the President and with our military commanders. These too are counterproductive and send exactly the wrong message. When members of Congress pursue an anti-war strategy that's been called slow bleed, they're not supporting the troops, they are undermining them. And when members of Congress speak not of victory, but of time limits, deadlines, or other arbitrary measures, they're telling the enemy simply to watch the clock and wait us out.
Applause?
Anyone can say they support the troops, and we should take them at their word. But the proof will come when it's time to provide the money. We expect the House and Senate to meet the needs of our military and the generals leading the troops in battle on time and in full measure.
Well, you arrogant son of a bitch. The proof will come when it's time to provide the money. Okay, yeah, like the money you're giving to Al-Qaeda-friendly Sunni groups in your proxy war against Hamas and the Iranians, right? Oh, you filthy, filthy man, you. And what he's saying, the subtext is, we want more warm bodies and more money indefinitely. If it bankrupts the nation, if it kills all our troops, if it gives them all brain injuries, if we're forced to send 50-year-old National Guard grandmas into battle, as long as it's not me or mine, even if we're creating an entire population of maimed and crippled veterans, the government will then ignore. It doesn't matter, because Halliburton needs the contracts and the oil, and we have to support Israel, and we've got moving costs to cover. Did you hear? We're moving to Dubai. And the war on terror will never end, because we're also funding Sunni militants who support Al-Qaeda. Perpetual war for perpetual profit, baby. Well, if, you know, I would almost be willing to be wrong. I know I'm not, but willing to be wrong about this religious claptrap nonsense and nether worlds and afterlives, just so I could perch on a rock in hell when my time comes and watch Cheney burning forever in this lake of fire that my grandmother used to tell me about. Oh, that would be wonderful. That'd be almost worth smelling the brimstone through all eternities to see that son of a bitch roast. What an evil, evil man. How can members of the American Israel Political Action Committee applaud this son of a bitch? He's talking about more death and destruction. He's talking about nuclear war. He's talking about murdering innocent people. He's talking about sending Americans to die and to kill. How can any group in good conscience, other than, oh, I don't know, the American Legion or the Republican National Committee, applaud this evil, degenerate man? How can they do that? Okay, just a couple more from Cheney when we come back. And then I'm going to tell you how the Democrats responded to all this. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. The hour. Welcome back. All right, back to Cheney. Two more sound bites on Cheney, and then what the Democrats in the House and the Senate are doing to respond to this filthy, degenerate, America-hating thug. In this one, you'll hear Cheney talks about what a disaster it would be if we pulled out of Iraq. Wait for it. Because the Sunni governments might back Sunni extremists against Iran, widening the conflict into a civil war. Oh, my God. Does he think no one read Cy Hirsch's last article? Because this is exactly what Cheney just did. Cheney is funding the Sunni extremists in a proxy war against Hamas and Hezbollah in Iran, and he is warning the attendees at this AIPAC conference against the very action he and his piglet puppet president just took. This is beyond Orwellian.
I stand here today as a strong supporter of Israel, and Israel has never had a better friend in the White House than George Bush. Friends owe it to friends to be as candid as possible. So let me say that a precipitous American withdrawal from Iraq would be a disaster for the United States and the entire Middle East. Shiite extremists backed by Iran could be in an all-out war with Sunni extremists led by Al-Qaeda and remnants of the old Saddam regime. As this battle unfolded, Sunni governments might feel compelled to back Sunni extremists in order to counter growing Iranian influence, widening the conflict into a regional war. If Sunni extremists prevailed, Al-Qaeda and its allies would recreate the safe haven they lost in Afghanistan. Except now, with the oil wealth to pursue weapons of mass destruction and underwrite their terrorist designs, including their pledge to destroy Israel.
This son of a bitch, I swear to God. He says, as this battle unfolded, Sunni governments might feel compelled to back Sunni extremists in order to counter growing Iranian influence, widening the conflict into a regional war. That's exactly what this pig, what this monster just did. I can't stand this. Last one from Darth Cheney. Before, I guess, that telltale tingling in his leg reminded him it was time for his daily rejuvenating dose of baby blood. Cheney praises that great man of peace, Ariel Sharon. Great man of peace, Ariel Sharon. And that other great leader, Ronnie Reagan. The great leader, Ronald Reagan.
One of the great examples of leadership in our world is that of Ariel Sharon, a man of courage and a man of peace who remains in our thoughts.
Oh, my God.
It would be easier, no doubt, to avoid controversy by following snapshot polls,
yeah,
or catering to elite opinion or seeking political refuge in comfortable myths.
Yeah, okay.
But President Bush understands, as Ronald Reagan did, that if history teaches anything, it teaches self-delusion in the face of unpleasant facts is folly. America is a good and an honorable country. We serve a cause that is right and a cause that gives hope to the oppressed in every corner of this earth.
Oh, Christ.
We are defended by some of the bravest citizens this nation has ever produced. We're in a war that was begun on the enemy's terms. We're fighting that war on our own terms, and we will prevail.
Oh, my God. I mean, where do you begin with this pig? You don't. You just sit back and say, yeah, okay. Bush understands, as Ronald Reagan did, that if history teaches anything, it teaches self-delusion in the face of unpleasant facts is folly. Folly. Bush doesn't understand anything like that. America is a good and honorable country. That's right. It's just you criminals in the executive branch giving it such a bad name, right? We serve a cause that is right, he says, and gives hope to the oppressed. What? What he should have said, we serve a cause that is necessary and gives hope to the oil companies. We are in a war, he says, that was begun on the enemy's terms. That would be the Saudis, right? Oh, for Christ's sake. Now, keeping in mind what he said, Cheney's redirection of America's strategy contradicts Washington's dictum by inciting foreign wars and campaigns of terror against America and its allies, which is a flagrant violation of America's original military and diplomatic traditions. This is written by Michael Carmichael. The New Yorker's ace investigative reporter Seymour Hersh had done it again with his latest earth-shattering expose. Hersh revealed Dick Cheney and his henchmen had deliberately set about inciting chain reactions of sectarian violence and civil wars across the Middle East via a massive covert operation disguised as a shift of geopolitical strategy. Now, instead of launching a war against Iran, Cheney, with Bush's complicity, has pulled the trigger on a covert war of global proportions pitting Sunnis against Shias. According to Seymour Hersh, Cheney's covert plan involves massive U.S. financial backing for militant Sunni groups that are known to be inimical to the Shia militias of the Badr Brigades, the Mahdi Army, Hamas, and Hezbollah, all of whom support the revolutionary government of Iran. The U.S.-backed Sunnis include the Muslim Brotherhood, a vast and powerful multinational organization who are definitely on friendly terms with al-Qaeda and its allies, including the Taliban. The government of Saudi Arabia is Sunni, although they are deeply despised by the Muslim Brotherhood, the Taliban, and al-Qaeda because of their subservience to the masters in Big Oil and George Bush's America. The Israeli right and a rogue faction of the royal family of Saud, who are loyal to Prince Bandar bin Sultan, are backing Cheney's covert plan. The ultimate objective of Cheney's redirection of U.S. strategy in the region is to redraw the national boundaries of the Middle East and to give an explosive multiple birth to a sprawling litter of new cantons, colonies, domains, enclaves, protectorates, statelets, and territories, all pledged to American and Israeli dominance of the region and its precious oil, gas, and energy reserves. Coincidentally, at the same time that Cheney is fomenting religious conflicts and civil wars between the Sunnis and the Shias, the U.S.-backed government in Iraq is poised to hand over control of Iraqi oil production to the Western oil companies. In this plan, the government of Iraq will retain their ownership of the oil reserves, but they are irrevocably awarding the right to extract the oil reserves exclusively to Big Oil. Given the sequence of events, Dick Cheney might argue for the Jungian principle of synchronicity, an unexplainable consequence of simultaneity, sometimes as pleasant as serendipity, but sometimes as painful as catastrophe. But few would believe him. Cheney might implore, why not redistribute the oil wealth of Iraq to Big Oil at the same time the U.S. shifts its strategy to trigger a wave of religious confrontations designed to dismember, dissect, and carve up the entire region while masking the expropriation of the Iraqi people's oil rights? The reply could be, because this crude tactic is blatantly immoral, unethical, and illegal. But those trivialities have never stopped Cheney before, nor are they likely to stop him now. Another peculiar aspect of the case involves Dick Cheney's elder daughter, Elizabeth Cheney, the mother of five. The vice president arranged for Elizabeth Cheney to be appointed to the office of Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs in the State Department. In her official capacity, Elizabeth Cheney also heads a shadowy operation called the Iran-Syrian Operations Group that was empowered to allocate funds totaling roughly $80 million per year to dissident groups in Iran. In recent months, the Bush White House has issued a series of complaints about Iran arming terrorists in Iraq with explosive devices that have been traced to the Iranian military. At this time, Congress does not know whether any of the funding directed by Cheney's daughter was subverted to arms terrorists or to arm terrorists or not. This weekend, armed conflict in the border area between Iran, Pakistan, and Afghanistan has been traced to Sunni terrorists in Iran who are funded by America, coming as it does promptly after Cheney's visit to the region and his shakeup of Pakistani intelligence officials. This troubling aspect of the current policy redirection detailed by Hersh could surely become the subject of congressional scrutiny. In the finale to his latest article, Seymour Hersh implores Senators Jay Rockefeller and Ron Wyden of the Intelligence Committee to hold public hearings to probe, to expose, and to investigate as promptly and thoroughly as possible what should now be termed the Iran-Qaeda scandal. It is crystal clear, thanks to Seymour Hersh, that Congress should launch an investigation next week into Cheney's costly and dangerous covert war. It would be surprising if in the course of this investigation, that the Senate did not discover incriminating evidence against the vice president, linking him to the abuses of presidential power, obstruction of justice, misappropriation of federal funds, and violations of U.S. and international law against the incitement of war, conflicts, and acts of terrorism. The Senate investigation of Iran Qaeda should once again subpoena the documents of the vice president's secret briefings on energy policy that have been classified since early 2001. Continued reticence to cooperate with the senatorial investigation into the legality of covert operations to precipitate a global religious war between the Sunnis and the Shias, with the Bush-Cheney White House arming, backing, and financing the Sunnis, would be untenable in today's political climate.
He lies, he just lies, and he lies, and he lies, and he lies. He can lie any time, he can lie any place. He crosses his fingers and keeps a straight face. He lies, and he lies, and he lies. Too many believe him, they're bleating like sheep. Accomplices now in the liar's deceit. He lies.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 23 past the hour. Kurt in Minneapolis and I are on the same page. He sent me an email which has enough expletives in it that I can't read it on the air. But the point Kurt's trying to make, and I completely agree, Cheney is such I don't know. He is obviously insane. He's a madman to the same degree that Hitler was. The same kind of megalomania that Hitler. Because Hitler never thought the people could see the insanity of what he was doing, and Cheney is the same way. Let's pretend that there is a creature named Osama bin Laden. If bin Laden really wanted nuclear weapons, or if the Iranians really wanted nuclear weapons, how easy would it be to get them? Bin Laden will not live long enough to see the development of nuclear weapons in Iran. Because the process is, oh my God, it just takes forever to do it. That's A. B, if some of these so-called Islamic terrorists that Cheney is talking about, if they really want to get their hands on weapons of mass destruction, why not just get in touch with the Pakistanis or the Chechens? Or now, why the Chechens? Well, because the Chechens are looked at in the old Soviet Union as thugs and criminals, and simply because they want their independence and have been fighting for it for God knows how many years now. But all the loose nukes that used to belong to the Soviet Union that the Republicans in our Congress refused to appropriate money for, so that they can be decommissioned, taken apart, destroyed. Republicans have said no, hell no to that. So there are, we all know about this, suitcase bombs and all this other crapola, nuclear weaponry just floating around the planet like so many soon-to-be-gone icebergs. If these Iranians or these Muslim terrorists or the Brotherhood or whatever name they're using now really, really wanted to get their hands on nuclear weapons, do you think they would sit back on their asses and wait for Iran to build the kind of facilities necessary to produce bombs? There's enough out there right now. Jesus Christ, somebody give me $300 million and I will get my hands on two or three of them by this time tomorrow night. Oh, my God! So there stands Cheney and Bush and the rest of these sorry sons of bitches talking about Iran and nuclear weapons. Oh, my God! Somebody! The hell with signing up at Nova M? Give me your money! I'll go buy a goddamn bomb tomorrow at lunch! Oh, Jesus! Take a break here, Kathy.
Time loser, headlong to his death. Oh, it...
Nighty night, truth seekers. Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
About 25 before the hour. So, how do the Democrats respond to all this madness that we have just spent 2.5 hours sharing with you? Huh? I guess the first hour didn't count. This is what the Associated Press is reporting tonight. Top House Democrats retreated Monday, from an attempt to limit Bush's authority for taking military action against Iran. As the Democratic leadership concentrated on a looming confrontation with the White House over Iraq, officials said Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other members of the leadership had decided to strip from a major military spending bill a requirement for Bush to gain approval from Congress before moving against Iran. Do you want me to repeat that for you, truth seekers? The Democrats took out of a military spending bill a requirement that Bush get approval from Congress before moving against Iran. What the Democrats have done is just handed Bush carte blanche to do what he wants regarding Iran. Now, these same goddamn Democrats will come back 8, 9, 10 months from now, when there's blood all over the planet, when there's the possibility of nuclear war, and these same Democrats are going to say, oh, well, this we didn't know when we did that. We didn't know he was going to attack Iran. Let me go on. Conservative Democrats, as well as lawmakers concerned about the possible impact on Israel, had argued for the change in strategy. Jesus Christ, who runs our country? Now, I'm not going to jump on the Jew-hating bandwagon, but my God! The possible impact on Israel? What about the possible impact on the United States? The measure provides nearly $100 billion more for the fighting in these two wars that this pig has begun, and includes more money than Bush requested for operations in Afghanistan. The White House, this again, Associated Press, the White House has issued a veto threat against the bill, and Vice President Dick Cheney attacked its supporters in a speech today declaring, quote, they are telling the enemy simply to watch the clock and wait us out, end quote. Cheney said that, we played the sound for you. Within hours, the Democrats, the Democratic Party leadership in the United States House stripped from the spending bill a requirement that Bush come to the House, as mandated pretty much by the Constitution, come to the House of the Senate for approval to wage another war. And the Democrats said, no, that's okay. We'll take it out. Now, on top of that, House Republican leader John Boehner of Ohio issued a statement that said Democrats shouldn't count on any help passing this legislation to try to cut down on the bloodshed. Boehner said, quote, Republicans will continue to stand united in this debate and will oppose efforts by Democrats to undermine the ability of General Petraeus and our troops to achieve victory in the global war on terror, end quote. You see what they do? Now, how did the top Democrats react, especially to that statement by Boehner? Pelosi issued a written statement that said the vice president's remarks prove that, quote, the administration's answer to continuing violence in Iraq is more troops and more treasure from the American people, end quote. Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, issued a statement saying that America was less safe today because of the war. Harry Reid's statement said, the president must change course, and it's time for the Senate to demand that he do it. Jesus Christ. Now, the clause or the amendment or the section of the spending bill related to Iran came from a desire to make sure that Bush did not launch a third attack without going to Congress for approval. But that opposition drew opposition from numerous members of the rank and file, the Democrats, in a series of closed-door sessions last week, according to the Associated Press. Representative Shelley Berkley, a Democrat from Nevada, said in an interview that there is widespread fear in Israel about Iran. In Israel. Several officials said there was widespread opposition to the proposal of making Bush come to the Congress for approval to nuke Iran. There was opposition to that at a closed-door meeting last week of conservative and moderate Democrats who said they feared tying the hands of the administration when dealing with an unpredictable and potentially hostile regime in Tehran. What has Iran done to indicate that it is unpredictable and potentially hostile? What has it done? We're the ones that overthrew their government. Oh my God. I swear it just continues, right? It just continues. Now Jan writes, the vast majority of the Democrats, including Nancy Pelosi, who will be addressing AIPAC tomorrow, have long shown that they put whatever Israel wants above the best interests of their own country. Even though my member of Congress told a visiting group that at least half the Congress hates AIPAC, there are few, if any, members of Congress with the courage to stand up to them. This becomes even more interesting when one realizes that while groups like AIPAC push for war against Iraq and Iran, the majority of America's Jews are not of the same opinion, and indeed the majority of American Jews continue to oppose Bush and Cheney's war against Iraq. And George in Seattle writes, Mike, the Democrats won't cut off the war funding. They won't impeach Bush or Cheney or anyone else in the Bush crime family. Israel plans on reinvading Lebanon this April, so what do the Democrats do? They drop legislative language prohibiting Bush from invading Iran. Mike, why did we vote for these people? What the hell good are they? You know, I'm really, really, really losing my faith in the Democratic Party. I go through this in cycles. Maybe you do too. And I usually snap back out of it because I think, no, you know, while there's hope, there's life. And every single time, I'm starting to feel like just the world's biggest half-wit. Every single time I think, okay, this time the Democrats will do it. They don't. Not only do they not do it, but the dirty sons of bitches become allies of Bush and Cheney. They spout the rhetoric. What Reid and Pelosi said today,
oh, well, we're going to strip that out of there. You know, he can do what he wants. But, you know, we really do think that there should be discussion. And I
feel like such a moron. I really do. I really do feel like a moron. And I know that a lot of people who listen to this program who are Democrats are also starting to feel like morons. You know, game, set, match. It's like over, Truth Seeker, as far as the Democratic Party is concerned. Isn't it? Now, a lot of you are going to say, who have been following this program for years, are going to say, well, Jesus Christ, Malloy, you said this 2 years ago, you said it 4 years ago, you said it 6 years ago. And you're right. I did. But the Democratic leadership now is giving Bush and Cheney permission to do anything they want to do. Anything. You know, you can make the argument that Bush and Cheney totally disrespect the legislative branch and the judicial branch of government. And you'd be correct. But the Democratic Party leadership that had an opportunity, the American people gave them the opportunity to stop this. Bush's popularity, whatever that means, is around high 20s, low 30%. The Democrats were given the power to stop this filthy war machine, this sick bastard Cheney. We, the American people, gave them the power to do it, and they won't. They won't. Not only will they not do it, they are enabling Bush to go off on another adventure, this time in Iran. They are putting the interests of the state of Israel above the interests of the state of the United States. Period. There is no debate here. And as Jan said, American Jews don't support this. AIPAC supports it. Israel supports it. Cheney supports it. Bush supports it. This is madness. This is madness. This is madness. Before the hour, thanks to Ian Hoff, who engineered the program tonight and handled your calls, which was not very difficult tonight, right, Ian? Since I didn't take any. Oh, Jesus. I'm sorry. Tomorrow night is going to be all calls. Thanks to Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, who is our webmaster, and the moderators at MikeMolloy.com on the message board. If you haven't gone there, you should. Just be careful they don't bitch slap you and throw you off the message board. You got to be careful over there. You know, say what you want to say, but, you know, be cool. Go to novemradio.com if you would and sign up for the downloads and podcasts and a chance to win 10 grand. It's still there. We still haven't hit 5,000, have we, Kathy? Can't believe that. Got an email here from Kevin. Mike, I finally need to write to you tonight. I know you're one of the few open-minded and fair hosts in this country, and screw the ratings, too, by the way. Your show is quality, and that's what counts most, but what I wanted to say is the following. I was just listening to Larry King live for a moment. Bill Maher was justifying blaming Muslims, and I mean all Muslims, for all the problems in the world, especially since September 11, 2001. Maher has a typical ahistorical view on history and the past. Thank God for people like you, Mike, always point out the plight of the Palestinians, the overthrow of the Mossadegh regime in Iran in 1953 that ultimately led to the Islamic Revolution in Iran. I have yet to hear the likes of Bill Maher talk about Western colonialism and America's informal empire around the world in the age of globalization. I know many people on the left loved Bill Maher, but I think the guy misspeaks and has a very parochial view of history and Western imperialism. Moreover, what the late intellectual and professor Edward Said called Orientalism fits people like Bill Maher and his anti-Muslim, anti-Arab bigotry quite well. I am not saying that there cannot be objective analysis of corrupt Arab regimes, but let's also realize that the likes of violators of human rights regimes in Jordan, Egypt, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait are all allies of both Israel and the United States. If one is going to endlessly criticize Muslims and Arabs, I would hope an accurate historical analysis would be included that spoke of Western aggression and imperialism, colonialism, undermining Arab regimes as well as overthrowing those governments not favorable to the West or the United States. Mike, I want to thank you and send my best regards that you present an accurate picture of the Middle East situation in a very fair way and do not exhibit the kind of hate and bigotry toward Muslims and Arabs which Mr. Maher obviously does. I do not want to say that Maher is a gatekeeper of the establishment, but he sounds like one. I do not find Maher to be funny, but he is a good pompous ass. I prefer to listen to your show over Bill Maher's any day. Well, thanks, Kevin. I am sort of tired of, quote, liberals, end quote, saying offensive things as well. Being a liberal, I catch this stuff, but have yet to ever hear you be anything but fair in your analysis of the Middle East situation. Every nation and society has its radical elements. There is also state terrorism, which the United States is guilty of in the past 6 years as well. But nobody dares say this out loud too much. Take care. All the best. Sincerely, Kevin. Well, thanks, Kevin, but I receive a lot of mail from people who think that my position on the Middle East is it's totally and completely biased against Israel, which it is not, never has been. I get letters from people who say I'm anti-Semite, referring to being anti-Jewish, which I am not and never have been and never will be. I think it is very clear to anyone who has taken the time to study the situation in Israel over the past 60 years that the root of most of the problems that are facing the United States and the Middle East right now have stemmed from that unending conflict between Jews and Palestinian Arabs. It is a situation that will probably never be solved, not in my lifetime or my children's or my grandchildren's, because there is too much interest in keeping religious hatred alive. I don't care if it's Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Hindu. It doesn't make any difference. Religious contempt and hatred and wanting to murder the infidel, no matter who the infidel is. I don't know. Maybe that's genetic. It's horrifying to me. It's absolutely horrifying when I think about the conflict on this planet right now that is religious based. It just turns my stomach. It turns my stomach. And there's not a damn thing I can do about it. But you know, when I address these the issue of the Palestine, Israel, what have you, I come to this with having tried to read and study and understand the situation over the past 25 years since the first Intifada. Prior to that, I have read Israeli authors, Palestinian authors, Arabs, Jews, Christians. Everybody from Meir Kahane to Edward Said. I have done my damnedest to try to approach this this Middle Eastern problem in an unbiased way. I have zero respect for religionists, and I don't care what religion they are, who use their religion as a means of justifying mass murder, genocide, killing, apartheid, whatever it is. I have no respect. Were I a believer, I would be on my knees praying them into hell. But I don't. I don't believe this garbage. I don't believe any of it. But what I see is what you see. It's the same thing. And I have tried and tried and tried to understand this. Not understand in the sense of accepting, but understand it in the sense of being able to make coherent points of view for debate, for argument, what have you. And I just, you know, it's heartbreaking to me. It just makes me weep and wail and rend my garments and gnash my teeth and flail myself. I bleed for the Jews. I bleed for the Arabs and the Palestinians. I do. I mean, I can't not. I bleed for the dead children. So do you. So do you on both sides. You do too. You know you do. You know you do. Your phone call is tomorrow night, all right? Thanks for participating. I appreciate that. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. Keep it lit, okay? I'm Mike Malloy.